I'll try to be as brief. We will now call the meeting of the Program and Allocations Committee to order. Confirmation of a quorum?
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Next is our consent calendar. Is there any? There's a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, passes. We'll now move up into our federal programs. The first is recommendation of car sharing projects for Cycle 2 Climate Initiative Funds. This is MTC Resolution 4035 revised.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Holm with MTC's Planning Section. This past April, the Commission approved $2 million in Cycle 2 CMAQ funds to increase car sharing as part of the Climate Initiatives Program. The Climate Initiatives Program was developed as part of Plan Bay Area to meet the GHG goals identified in SB 375. A call for projects was released this summer, which focused on expanding car sharing into urban and suburban communities, low-income communities, business parks, and the implementation of innovative technologies. MTC received 7 applications, totaling $3.4 million in funding requests. Staff is recommending to fund 6 of the projects, with slightly reduced funding for all but one of the projects to fit within the $2 million funding amount. These recommended funding amounts can be found on Attachment 1. Staff has notified all the project sponsors, and they agreed that the projects are scalable, and staff will work with them to help refine their project scopes to fit within their adjusted budgets. The projects that staff is recommending to fund include Sonoma County Transportation Authority, which would establish car sharing pods at transit centers in Santa Rosa, including smart stations, Contra Costa Transportation Authority in partnership with City Car Share and the Bay Area Climate Collaborative, which would establish car sharing pods at the Richmond, El Cerrito, Fruitvale, and West Oakland BART stations, as well as business centers in the Contra Costa and Alameda counties. The City of San Mateo, which would establish car sharing pods at Caltrain and other locations within the City of San Mateo. The City of Oakland, which would develop city programs that would support car sharing, as well as partnering with Transform to conduct outreach to areas in East Oakland. The City of Hayward, which would establish car sharing pods at 2 BART stations and downtown. And the Transportation Authority of Marin, which would establish car sharing pods and outreach in the Canal neighborhood. The only project staff is not recommending to fund is the City of Richmond. Their application did not have enough information for staff to adequately evaluate it. However, a car sharing pod will be established at the Richmond BART station as part of CCTA's application. We expect all projects to be implemented within 2 years. Staff recommends you, as part of your action, you approve item 3C, which would approve Resolution 4035 and other additional changes to Resolution 4035. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Okay. Questions? Comments? Okay. Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to figure out, because one of the statements says that, and maybe I'm just not following this correctly, but one of the first project selection process, it says suburban or urban communities that do not currently have a robust car sharing service. My point is, if I look at all the people that are being funded or all the agencies being funded, I'm not sure how we achieve that goal.
A lot of the areas that we will be putting car sharing pods in are areas that don't currently have car sharing or are not near car sharing.
So how does, for example, in the City of Fremont at a BART station, how do we establish car sharing when, I mean, that's probably one of the biggest suburban cities in the Bay Area. I know it's the second largest city in Alameda County, but I don't see how car sharing gets to, or how this gets to getting car sharing established there.
Another one of our requirements is also the link between transit centers and business districts. And so a lot of the pods will be located at BART stations. The idea is that those who may live in suburban locations, who take BART, who would normally drive to their transit center, they can experiment taking transit, get in a car share pod, or find a car share pod at the BART station or transit center.
I understand the goal. What I'm not understanding is, when you look at who got the money, how we achieve that goal in the suburbs.
Commissioner, if I can answer your question, perhaps. This project selection was conducted through an open call for projects process, so jurisdictions or agencies were encouraged to apply, and all but one of the agencies that did apply is funded through this program. So, for example, the City of Fremont may have chosen not to apply for various reasons.
Okay. But I think for the City of Oakland, did I read that Transform is doing that?
Yes, there will be a partnership with Transform for outreach in the East Oakland community.
So would it be, what I'm trying to get at, is Transform going to be working in the suburbs, or is this still remaining just an Oakland program? And one of the stated goals, I guess, or one of the stated processes for selection is that we're really not achieving.
And we do have the Transform project is a partnership with the City of Oakland, so they will specifically be there. We are funding CarShare in the City of Hayward and City of San Mateo, which were two of the more suburban communities that applied for the grant application.
Okay.
We also are trying to encourage any cities to apply for these programs, so we did reach out to them all to make sure they knew that the call for projects was available.
Did you reach out to the congestion management agencies too?
Yes. We actually sent the information to all of the CMAs and offered to present at their TAC meetings if they wanted us to.
So then is all the money gone for a year or so?
All the funding in this cycle of the CMAC program is allocated with this action.
So is that a year? 2 years? What is it?
This is Alex Bachelman, Deputy Executive Director for Policy. This comes out of the One Bay Area Grant Program. And so we have a 4-year program actually in an item later today. We're talking about it. We're asking for you to extend it a 1 year. So this is all of the money for this round. We will be talking in the spring through the fall about the next round. So if the commission wants to support more money for climate initiatives and car sharing as part of that, then we'll be having that discussion then. But this is all
I'm just
for
trying
this
to
round.
Figure out how long this round is. So is it 1 year? Or is it 2 years?
Well, this was actually just one car sharing program as part of a 4-year cycle.
Okay. Thank you.
We do also have in the spring, as part of the climate program, we are going to be doing a transportation demand management call for projects. So there's a lot of similarity in these two programs coming out of the climate program, and we'll continue to encourage all of the jurisdictions to apply for those funds this coming spring.
Thank you. Actually, Commissioner Bates. Haggerty spoke to my concerns. I really feel like this is a really excellent program, and I would like to see it funded in a much more robust manner, because I think it really does provide an opportunity for people in the suburbs to get a way to not necessarily need another car, but figure out how to use a car that makes more sense. So I'm really one of those who want to see more money in this program.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Where was my second? I'm sorry. Oh, excuse me. Iris, I'm sorry.
You better be. just briefly, I'm Iris Starr with the City of Oakland, and I want to thank the commission and staff for putting forward a recommendation for the City of Oakland, along with our partners, Transform, for funding for a car share program. We're in the middle right now of writing a policy report that's going to go to City Council, and the funding that you've approved is going to go to working out the details of how that's going to work. And we already have a car sharing firm interested, and it's a point-to-point car sharing arrangement, which is novel, and we're really excited about it. And so I just want to thank you on behalf of the city.
Thank you. That's the only
Mr. Chair.
Iris, we have a question from Commissioner.
I'm sorry, I just want to understand something you said. So is the money that MTC is, I'm over here, Iris.
Oh,
I know, I saw you looking around. Is the money that MTC is giving really just being used to establish policies and write papers and all that? Or is this actual project money that's going to do something about, car sharing?
No, actually, it's not being used for policy. Staff is putting together policy It's actually being used for implementation of car sharing.
Okay. I misunderstood you then.
There's a lot of pieces to it. What are the fees? How do you charge different? How do you reserve on space, on street parking, that kind of thing?
So it does sound like it's not going to actual project.
Well, the vendors are coming to the city, and what the city is doing is working through a program with the help of the consultants about how that's actually going to work.
I get that. I usually like when the city, this is my policy area, I mean, meaning this is my policy feeling, but I normally like when all those details are worked out, and so when we give the money, it actually implements the program. It actually gets people sharing cars. And works the program. I really don't like when we pay to establish policies and things like that, but that's just my own philosophical feeling, and you don't even need to respond. Just one last question of staff. Did we reach out to business parks like Hacienda Business Park and Bishop Ranch and all that?
Yeah, and they're actually included in the CCTA project. They are including car share at Bishop Ranch and Hacienda as potential pods. They actually both were at our pre-grant workshop to hear what the opportunities were, and they did submit with CCTA.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other commissioners?
Commissioner, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Bates.
So I just want to indicate I agree with the comments that it would be great to have it be in the implementation phase, but it's also the planning phase is really important. We're also looking at the same issues. The point-to-point is the really the new thing. Because where do you park? How do you, you know, you do it in residential parking? You take away a spot? I mean, there are issues that need to be worked out. And I believe this program, Point to Point, is going to be a program that will be in Oakland, Berkeley, and Alameda in a large area. So I think it's actually worthwhile to program and something that other people should watch. Because normally, when you have a city car share or a car share zip or whatever, you have to return it to the place you took it from. So this will allow people to drop them. And there's a lot of issues involved with trying to figure out how to get them back and all kinds of issues about supply. So I think it's worthwhile to move forward with.
Okay. Thank you. There's no other questions. There's a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Would you mind please restating the motioner and the seconder? I didn't catch who they were.
There was Campos and Bates. Okay, we will move to our next item, which is the 2014-15 Transit Priorities and AB 664 Bridge Toll Revenue Preliminary Program and Revision of 2012-13 and 2013-14 TCP Program. This is MTC Resolution Number 4035 Revised and 84 revised, as well as 4162, 4163, and 4165. Sarah?
Good morning, Commissioners. Shruti Hari from the Programming and Allocation Section. And I have for your information and consideration today a programming update to the Transit Capital Priorities program. So MTC is actually responsible for programming the region's FTA formula funds as well as the Cycle 2 STP funds that the Commission has designated to supplement the FTA funds. And so these funds, along with the AB 664 bridge toll funds, constitute the Transit Capital Priorities or the TCP program. And MTC programs these TCP funds to eligible transit operators to fund mainly transit capital replacement and rehabilitation projects, as well as some preventive maintenance and operating assistance projects. Now, the recently adopted core capacity challenge grant program projects are also funded under this program. And the TCP programming usually covers a two-year period to allow agencies to plan and budget ahead for their needs. And on the slide, we have projected the revenues for this program for FY 15 and 16. So it's a total of $819 million under the TCP revenues that we are projecting for FY 15 and FY 16. Now, I want to specifically note here that we were very conservative in our projections since Congress only extended MAP 21 through part of FY 15 with no new authorization. And so we assume the revenue growth projections to be 0% in FY 15, with a 1.6% inflation adjustment in FY16 over the FY14 funding levels. Now, if you compare that to Plan Bay Area, we had assumed a 3% annual growth in funding levels, and so our projections are that you see here are definitely on the conservative side. Now, as part of developing the TCP program, we sent out a call for projects, and in response to the call for projects this time, the transit operators requested funds totaling over $1 billion. And as we saw on the previous slide, we only projected revenues of $819 million, and that left us with a combined shortfall of $220 million over the two-year period. So we were dealing with an initial shortfall of $142 million in FY15 and $78 million in FY16. And the San Francisco-Oakland urbanized area was heavily oversubscribed as usual and contributed to the bulk of the shortfall. And when we analyzed the shortfall, we found that it seemed to be a result of two factors. One was a confluence of major vehicle replacement needs for several operators around the region, especially BART and Caltrain. Capital needs are inherently lumpy, and it seemed like the region is currently at the leading edge of a major lump. And our projections of FTA apportionments in FY15 and 16 were definitely reduced relative to the projections made in Plan Bay Area, as we discussed on the previous slide, due to the uncertainty in funding levels in the federal authorization. I want to also note here that the shortfall is not the result of the core capacity challenge grant program. It has a small impact, but a really small impact in FY15, and the bulk of the funding that we're expecting for this program would be requested starting somewhere around in FY17. Now, of course, a shortfall this huge was challenging, and we had to use several tools for reducing the shortfall and balancing the program. The first was to start with a one-year program, as that made the shortfall easier to deal with and would also give staff more time to evaluate other options for resolving the rest of the shortfall. And we're hoping to come back to the Commission next fall with a program for FY16. Next, we capped the vehicle replacement projects at $20 million in order to prevent committing a significant portion of the programming to one operator in this year. And if the cost of the vehicle procurement exceeds the annual cap, the difference will be programmed in subsequent years, subject to the availability of funds. Now, the other thing we did was we also requested operators to reassess their requests and consider deferring their high-scoring projects to free up funds and help reduce the shortfall. And so Golden Gate, SFMTA, and Weta all were able to defer some of the projects, which further helped us reduce the shortfall. Now, MTC staff also initiated discussions with operators with significant undisbursed balances from prior year grants and requested analyses of funding needs for fixed guideway projects to determine if those projects could be funded with grant balances in lieu of new programming. And so we recommended that the operators' fixed guideway caps be deferred by the percentage of their older active TCP grants that were currently undisbursed. And so the deferred fixed guideway caps would be programmed in subsequent years, subject to the availability of funds. We also deferred part of the BATCA replacement project from FY15, the funding for the BATCA replacement project from FY15 to FY16 to eliminate the remaining shortfall. And the above measures took care of the shortfall for FY15, but also deferred some of the shortfall to FY16, which still needs to be resolved. Now, the projected revenues for FY15 were sufficient to cover all high-scoring projects in FY15 after applying the measures that we talked about on the last slide. Now, the pie chart here provides a breakdown of the various type of projects that were that are included in the proposed $404 million FY15 program. And as you can see, bus, trolley, and van replacements make up the bulk of the program at $186 million and include bus replacement projects for most of the operators in the region. Now, the next couple of slides summarize the issues or the specific items we'd like to highlight that came up during the FY15 program development. The uncertainty of funding reauthorization is definitely an issue. Congress has not yet enacted a surface transportation bill to take the place of MAP 21, which, by the way, expires in May 2015. So the amount of funding available for the FY15 and the FY16 TCP programs are currently unknown. Also, a failure by Congress to boost funding for transit would exacerbate the challenge of bringing the region's transit system into a state of good repair. As you can see, we're already dealing with major shortfalls here. And one of the reasons for the shortfall that we talked about previously was the confluence of the major vehicle replacement needs for several operators around the region. The proposed program includes funding for several major replacement projects, as shown here. And as I had previously mentioned, we had reduced the funding for the BART car replacement project from $75 million to $53 million in order to reduce our FY15 shortfall. Now, this reduction will not affect the cash flow of the project for the project, but will make meeting the remainder of the region's commitment of $871 million for the Phase 1 BART cars more challenging. Now, the proposed program also includes $5 million for the initiation of the Caltrain rail car replacement project. And we've also reserved, as part of this program, $10 million to help fund the $98 million requested by Caltrain for the same project in FY16. I want to note here that we received a request from VTA to defer the action to reserve the $10 million until the MTC and the JPB partners had worked out the schedule and funding plan for the Caltrain's rail cars. The proposed program also includes $5 million for the AC Transit Fleet Expansion Project, which is a core capacity challenge grant project. And we are expecting the BART and SFMTA fleet expansion projects, which are core capacity projects, to start in FY17. Now, the prior year grant balances or the undisbursed grant balances is an issue that we have focused on in this cycle of the TCP program development. Most operators have prior year FTA grant balances that have not yet been expended, with the balance of TCP grants roughly totaling $1 billion. And the balances may have legitimate reasons, such as the need to stockpile funds to award a major contract or multi-year construction schedules, but may also indicate that additional funding is not needed at this time. Now, the TCP policy ties new programming to the expenditure of prior year grants in order to optimize the region's limited federal funds. And grants for fixed guideway infrastructure projects, such as track and train control rehab, are the primary concern. The vehicle replacement projects are usually spent in a timely manner. Now, if you see the bar graph below, it shows the undisbursed grant balances for the fixed guideway operators in the region. And as you can see, some of these undisbursed grant balances are huge. The shortfall in the FY15 program was addressed in part by deferring programming for fixed guideway projects using a formula based on unexpended grant balances. And for the FY16 program, staff is proposing to set a target for spending of prior year grant balances over the next year for each fixed guideway operator, and the target would be equal to one-third of their older fixed guideway grant balances. And by older, we mean grants prior to 2012, mostly from 2002 to 2012. And if this target is met, staff would propose to program the full fixed guideway cap specified for the operator in the TCP policy. But if the target is not met, we would propose to do the same thing that we did in FY15, that is to defer their fixed guideway funding based on the unexpended grant balances. Now, the proposed program also reserves $11 million in fixed guideway funds for the Caltrain electrification project, which is consistent with the high-speed rail electrification MOU. But along with this program, we are also amending the previous program. And in the previous program, we had reserved FY13 and FY14 funds for the Caltrain electrification project, and we are proposing to program those for the Caltrain bridge replacement projects as requested by Caltrain. I also wanted to briefly mention about the AC Transit's request for their facilities. The core capacity challenge grant program included $162 million in cap and trade funds for the AC Transit facilities projects, as well as other local funds. But since the cap and trade funds have not started flowing as yet, AC Transit requested FY15 and FY16 TCP funds to support its highest priority facility projects like the CAD AVL to support the BRT, rehabbing and reopening the D3 facility in Richmond, as well as the operations control center relocation. And at this point, staff's recommendation is to advance $5 million of TCP funds in the current program for the CAD AVL project to just get it started, but also work with ACTC to secure Measure BB funds for this and other facilities and prioritize the D3 facilities when the cap and trade funds start becoming available. And all this is so that it is consistent with the core capacity challenge grant funding plan. Just wanted to mention here that we still have a shortfall in FY16. The gap between the funding requests and projected revenues in FY16 currently stands at $182 million. And listed below are some options that we will be evaluating in order to help us resolve the shortfall in FY16. And some of these are the same measures that helped us resolve the current shortfall. And as we evaluate these options further over the next year and as more information regarding some of these becomes available over the next year, some of these measures may become more viable than others in order to help us balance the program. And we are hoping to be back, like I mentioned, in the fall of next year with a balanced FY16 program. And that concludes my presentation on the programming update to the TCP program. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'd also like to recommend that the committee refer resolutions number 4162, 4035 revised, 4163, 4165, and 4084 revised to the commission for approval. I also want to note here that because resolution number 4035 is proposed for revision under other agenda items, it is included under item 3C with all its proposed revisions. Thank you.
Okay, comments?
Thank you. I apologize for being dense today, but in attachment A, I'm just trying to figure out what are the shaded areas? I mean, I think I might know the answer, but I don't want to assume it.
The shaded areas, I believe, that's 12-13, so we're making some revisions to the fiscal year 12-13 as well. So those are just the revisions to that fiscal year, which you acted on.
Okay, so when I look, for example, at AC Transit, those shaded areas don't mean that those are areas of defunding to make the shortfall.
That's correct. Really, the only changes in the 13 and 14 programs were related to Samtrans Caltrain and to San Francisco MTA. So any of the other shading was probably from a prior revision to that resolution. There were no changes to the AC Transit program.
Okay. I feel better.
Commissioner Campos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple of questions. Looking at the options for closing the shortfall in fiscal year 16, is there any possibility of finding additional resources to cover some of these improvements? The thing about deferring some of these purchases, for instance, is that, you know, it ends up perhaps costing more in the long run.
Commissioner, I'm not sure the answer is yes. I wish it were, because that'd be the obvious place where we'd want to land. But we've got a combination of circumstances here. We're getting less money from Washington than we thought, and given the change in party composition in the Senate, it's not as if the prospects for that have improved. And we also have these huge vehicle replacements coming all at once. Now, on the one hand, that can be manageable if we can develop a financing strategy, and that's one of the options that you see here.
Okay.
Now, as you know, financing doesn't create new money. It just borrows it from the future. But we sort of have a classic case of a need for a financing because we think once we get past these car buys, it's going to be a while getting past them because it's going to take multiple years. Then we can see the costs and the revenues balancing better. But for right now, those two factors are really driving the situation. We also wanted to emphasize to you, and this is something new, the fact that we've got those two factors bearing down on us at the same time that operators, two of them in particular, Muni and BART, have very large unexpended balances. And I think our view of that is, you know, you ought to clean your plate before you go back for seconds. So we've got to make sure that we get that problem under control as well, because it tends to exaggerate the funding crunch we have, because they've got a lot of money that they're not spending. Now, there are some reasons for that, you know, in terms of how long contracts take to let and work can be delayed. But the bottom line is we think we've got to get a much better handle on our efficient use of funds before we start committing significant new funds to the same systems. So it's really those three factors that are brought to bear here that I think are making this a bit of a perfect storm that we're trying to deal with. We're going to advocate for more money from the Congress, but this really is the biggest single source we have for transit capital replacement. And it's going to be very difficult to match this with something else.
Thank you, Steve. Given that it is a perfect storm and that we have limited resources, one question about the vehicle purchases. What kind of information do we expect or get from these agencies when they're buying these vehicles? For instance, do we ask whether or not there's a maintenance plan for the new vehicles? You know, how do we ensure that we're maximizing the investment?
Commissioner, if I may, and I probably forgot to state my name earlier, Ann Richmond, Director of Programming and Allocations. When we request information from the agencies as part of this call for projects, generally we request a certain amount of information about what the fleet is that's being replaced, how old they are, et cetera. If it's a bus fleet, we actually have a standard price list that we use throughout the region so that a bus of a certain length, say a 40-foot bus, we will pay a certain amount for that for any operator and no more or no less. So if an agency pays more for that as part of their contract, they would pick up the difference as part of their local funds. We generally don't request information about long-term maintenance costs. This program mostly only has enough money in it to fund the capital replacement and not ongoing maintenance, so we consider that part of the local responsibility as well.
Well, I would say that I have a concern about that. Because, and we have seen this in San Francisco, not recently, but before in the context of the County Transportation Authority funding some of the vehicle replacements in the past, and funding vehicle replacements without actually requiring that a maintenance plans be presented. And the reason that's relevant is that even though you're not necessarily paying for that, in the end, that is part and parcel of ensuring that you actually are going to make a good investment. And so if we have limited funds and you have an agency that is requesting money that doesn't have a maintenance plan, I would rather use that money for an agency that does, because it means that it's in the long run it's going to be a better investment. I feel that it's a relevant question, and I certainly would like to know. I imagine that all of them probably have that, but I would want us to find that out.
Commissioner, I think that's a fair point, and I would say that I think over the years we have been getting more and more into the weeds on the capital needs of these agencies, and I think over time we have gotten a better understanding of what they are. So we have a system in place that I think is a good base to build on, and if this is a place where the system's a little weak, we can work with the operators to try to improve that.
If you don't have a maintenance plan, it means that they're going to have to come back to us a lot, you know, in a very short period of time relative to how long it would take if they actually maximized the life of these vehicles. So I think it's irrelevant. Piece of information, and the answer is probably yes. I would imagine that no agency would make this kind of investment without having that in place, but I think it's appropriate for MTC to ask that information.
Yeah, I do expect that the plans exist. It's just they're not as transparent to us as they need to be. And just to leave you one example, I hope to reassure you a little bit. BART as an example, they are running their original cars. They're the oldest rail cars in operation in the country right now, but they did go through a sort of midlife replacement where they stripped the guts out of those things and completely rehabilitated them. So I think we can assure you that we are getting a lot of life out of the vehicles we're buying, but unfortunately they're all coming due at the same time.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to direct the Commission's attention to the letter, and thank you, staff, for referencing it in your presentation, from the General Manager of the VTA. And just to point out that the issue here is reprogramming $10.5 million of money that's already in VTA's 2015 adopted budget. And so they're not asking necessarily for a – and I'm not asking necessarily for a decision on how eventually to use the money, but just for a couple months for folks to talk about how that money is going to be expended and a little more time to address the situation of losing $10.5 million of their adopted budget.
Mr. Chairman, if I could respond, and I certainly want to welcome Commissioner Baker to the Commission. Good first question. I would like to give you a slightly longer answer than just the VTA, because it's relevant really to the three partners for Caltrain. And I think you're all aware, and Commissioner Baker, I think you probably are as well, even though you weren't on the board. A couple of years ago, the agencies all signed this nine-party MOU that we have for electrifying Caltrain. And everybody committed to various fund sources being used for that project, which includes not only electrifying the line, but buying new electric vehicles. That also was based upon a cash flow of when the project would need the money. And as you all know, generally speaking, all funding partners want to be the last money in, but you can't build a project that way. Somebody's got to go first. Someone's got to go second. You've got to have the money available during the period of construction unless you're going to get into pretty significant financing cost. I think, as you're all also aware, we've had some setbacks recently in terms of the cost and schedule of the project. And we are hard at work now with the three partners trying to identify several hundred million dollars of new money to deliver the program and to try to deliver it on a schedule that we can still, with a straight face, say is near term. Now, the issue here that we've had, and we really had the issue with all three of the local partners, is when's your money going to be available? And in the case of San Francisco, they had not put together their local match for the project. They've now passed a bond measure that I believe will satisfy that commitment. Now, the trouble is we're going to need more than the local match we thought we needed because the project costs more. But San Francisco has taken that step recently. As you heard from Shruti in the negotiations we had for the program that's before you, Samtrans, which runs the train, had wanted to spend more of this federal money that we have for rehabilitation of the existing railroad. And I don't blame them. I mean, they've got 100-year-old bridges in this railroad. But our agreement had said that we're going to use some of that money for electrification. So we had to negotiate a compromise, which is what you see before you, where we're reserving some money for electrification, not as much as we wanted, and probably more than Caltrain, Samtrans wanted, but we reached a middle ground. And here, I think, with VTA, we've got the same kind of tension. VTA, as you noted, has committed the funds, I believe, in their budget for an item of work called preventive maintenance, which is essentially converting capital money into operations. That is a very low-scoring activity here in our regional ranking system. And the reason VTA is able to do it is because they have a separate urbanized area that their money comes to from Washington. The other big urbanized area is San Francisco and Oakland, where all the other big guys in the sandbox have to play, Caltrain, Muni, BART, AC. Caltrain, though, actually spans into both sandboxes. And so the tension we've got here is that we're going to need money from this San Jose sandbox to buy these vehicles. Now, do we need it in FY15? Maybe we don't, because we've suffered a delay. But we're going to need it pretty soon. And this shouldn't have been news to VTA. So I think with all three agencies, we're trying to bring a better alignment into focus so that we can all stop talking about how much we support electrification and we can all start paying for it. So I think we could do as Nuria's letter suggests, and you could just defer this piece of the programming. You could also, and I would urge you to consider this as an option, proceed with the programming, but put a condition on this money that we not actually place it in the federal TIP, the Transportation Improvement Program, which is the document that really spends the money. So that would have the same effect of preserving the decision. But I think the difference between the two options is one would make the default, we're going to spend it on Caltrain. The other would make the default, we're going to spend it the way VTA's budget suggests. And I think that's a policy call for you all to make. I certainly agree with Nuria that we need to get to the bottom of this cost increase so that we can figure out exactly where we stand. But I'll tell you in conclusion, given the shortfall that we're facing, you know, now is not the time to be trying to figure out different ways to spend the money we've got. We need all the money that we thought we had committed to Caltrain a few years ago and several hundred million more. So I apologize for the length of that, but I did want to give you a lay of the land because this is not just a VTA issue. This is an issue for all three of the parties, and I'm going to be meeting with the general managers of those agencies soon, and I'm going to be asking them for more. And they're probably going to be resisting it because, look, everybody's got other priorities, but the only way we're going to get electrification done is if we make it the first priority for everybody for a time that we need to get the money in line for construction.
Okay. Commissioner Tissier, followed by Cortese.
Yes. Steve, thank you for that explanation, and I appreciate the letter. I know we all have our financial issues, and by the way, welcome, Mr. Baker. The one thing, obviously, we're very concerned about, and if I'm reading this correctly, that money is going to be in here, is the bridge replacement projects. I mean, that's on our front burner. If we don't fix those, we're going to be in a world of hurt. And I also understand this is not affecting our Metrolink replacement vehicles, the current ones were to add more trains. I think we would be fine at having further discussion that we put off this piece and talk about further. I think there is a bigger picture here, and that is the schedule and funding plan. I mean, it has to come together. I mean, I think we all have this on our front burner. The problem is, you know, whenever you have to open the wallet, it makes it harder to do that. So I'm comfortable, you know, continuing this if we can for a couple months, make sure we get a funding and schedule plan, and that we're going to have to do our best to adhere to it, or we're going to fall further behind in our schedule for Caltrain, and we hope that certainly doesn't happen.
Okay, Commissioner Cortese.
Well, thank you. Thank you to both commissioners who've just spoken on the issue. Steve, based on what Commissioner Tissier just said, I think the fundamental call here, or the question is in the letter, is there room for a continuance on this particular issue? Can it be separated out and held over for a couple of months? It sounded like you might be able to go along with that. And, you know, I really, that's the bottom line question for me. I mean, is this something that you could talk these folks about, work out before this comes to the commission, which is a really short turnaround, or is it better to bring it back in January?
I don't think the answer to that question is yes. I don't think we can get this done in 2 weeks. But I do know that Caltrain is hopeful of starting to get some contracts advertised early in the new year. And you can't advertise contracts if you don't have the money to pay them. So I think we need a couple of months. And look, I don't mean to pick a nit because it may sound like I'm doing that. But I think the real policy question for you is whether you want to leave the default position here that Caltrain gets the money, which is what we're recommending to you today, or do you want to leave the default position that VTA can proceed as they're planning? And I think when you get into negotiation, the default position matters sometimes. You don't think it does, the objective is the same in both cases, which is to defer any final action this month so we can work it out.
Having been involved, if I may, having been involved intimately, as many commissioners here were, in trying to pull this deal together this last time, you know, and this may not be the most popular thing for VTA to hear, but I think the continuance of this item needs to happen. But I think the default position needs to continue to be that this money moves until the parties, VTA, until if and when the parties including you, VTA and MTC, I mean, and Caltrain can come up with an alternative. And I say that because I think once we start, you know, the history of this triumvirate has been that as soon as somebody gets on a slippery slope and starts creating new default positions for their money, the whole thing goes to hell in a handbasket. And I don't really want, I'm sure nobody else wants, to go back to the drawing board on this. It was hard putting it together in the first place. I know you folks did most of the work, but a lot of us did a lot of lobbying work and support work from here to Washington, D.C. So I'd like to see the default be this, but also with a strong encouragement, also with the action to today to allow a two-month exploratory opportunity here and a strong encouragement to try to work things out so we don't, you know, have a split commission next time around. I can't make that motion because I'm here as a vice chair today, but if somebody would be willing to do that, I would be grateful.
Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll make a a motion to continue the item 2 months with the default position being the staff recommendation. And one thing I do want to point out, we do have this, given that this has to do with Caltrain vehicle procurement, we do have this lingering issue of the need for Caltrain, the need in the view of San Francisco, at least, for Caltrain to, for these vehicles to be compatible with high-speed rail vehicles in terms of level boarding. I want to stress that to San Francisco, this is critically important. We're very united, our mayor, our transportation authority, and so on and so forth. And so I think that that 2 months also probably gives us some additional time to resolve that. And so I would appreciate it if during that two-month period, in addition to dealing with whatever else has to be dealt with, if staff could really remain involved in that determination, because that's an important one.
Okay, Commissioner, we are, and I also, since they're not here, I don't think, I want to represent the fact that the High-Speed Rail Authority, the California High-Speed Rail Authority, feels very strongly about the issue as well. So it's not just one of the local partners thinking it's important. It really is one of our funding partners and probably somebody we're going to ask for more funding from to pull the deal together.
Absolutely. We had a hearing in San Francisco on Monday, and I know Caltrain is actively doing an analysis, but they still say they have not made a decision, and I just want that to stay on the front burner.
And I'll go ahead and second the motion, and also, if I may just make a comment on that, we are, JPB is looking very seriously at the whole level boarding issue, and so we're still in the mix.
Commissioner, there's a motion and a second. Commissioner Bates, followed by Cortese.
So just a couple of questions. Steve, is it necessary to take the whole item over to 2 months? I mean, I'm wondering whether... I mean, I'm not opposed to it, but I think from a staff point of view, and is it, would
yeah,
be better
and
to
I
separate
appreciate
out?
The question because I think just to clarify our understanding, basically the whole motion, the whole item would move ahead, but this piece would have a condition on it that we don't move to place it into the TIP for another 2 months so that we can bring this issue back to you. So everything else moves ahead.
Right. To clarify, yes, just this one piece would be delayed 2 months. Everything else could move forward today.
Okay, because the way it was stated, it didn't sound like that. So that's the intent. That's perfect.
My apologies.
That's perfect. So
thank you for the clarity. Everyone clear on the motion?
Excuse me? I just had one other, before we went to the vote on the motion. I'm interested in the cap and trade. Could you guys explain when that's actually going to flow? Is there any chance some of that money could be used to help us with some of these funding problems?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. and you'll recall that the core capacity program that you adopted in December was this big $8 billion beast that included most of it replacing the vehicle fleets for Muni, BART, and AC. And it also included some money for new vehicles for BART to San Jose. Based on what we're seeing in the applicable program from the cap and trade funding, that money is likely to be focused on expansion vehicles, not on replacing existing fleets, because the core purpose is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which means new passengers. You know, we've made the argument that if you run a system that's not reliable, you're going to lose passengers. And so making the system more reliable with new fleets is actually going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions too. But I think that argument is a bit more of a stretch for the folks in Sacramento. So our sense is that what we will be doing, and both BART and Muni, as an example, have options in their contracts to not only replace their existing fleet, but to buy new vehicles to run new service. And we'll probably be focusing our request to the state on those new vehicles for new service, because we think they're more likely to hit the jackpot.
Right. So can you explain to me just briefly, the cap and trade money is now available? Makes the allocation? I know there are various categories.
Various categories. We think the category that this particular need will seek is the rail category that is administered by the state transportation secretary, Brian Kelly. So his agency will be the decision maker, and they've got some draft guidance out that we'll be commenting on, and we'll probably see some decisions from them around the middle of next year.
Okay, and so the legislature at this point is out of the decision-making about where the money goes, other than the various pots of the money.
Well, I think they're out of it until they decide to get back into it. As you know, they decided to make the transportation money in cap and trade continuously appropriated. So that sort of takes them out on the year-to-year issue. But I think we potentially will have some rough sledding in some of these programs depending upon results, and the legislature may want to reconsider how far out they want to be.
So it's possible that to our legislative program we could try to address this issue about replacement of older vehicles with the argument.
It's possible. Look, I think at this point we're feeling a lot better about how this rail program is shaping up than we are, for example, on the housing and TOD program that's being administered by the Strategic Growth Council. That one looks to be a lot more problematic in terms of how they're putting it together. So I think we want to try to work with the agencies that are doing it right, and if some of them end up breaking the system, then we focus on fixing the things that are broken.
Well, maybe offline we could talk more about the housing, because I'm very interested in that funding, because we'd like to see that. Obviously, we're going to have rail connections, we're going to have BART and other transportation. We've got to make sure the housing is going to be there, and it's got to be affordable. So maybe we could talk about it offline.
Sure.
Okay.
Just real comment. I just wanted to note that it didn't take long for the Measure BB funds to show up down here at the Metro Center.
Okay. And thank you for raising them, Commissioner.
Okay. We do have a couple of ace public speaker. Richard Hitt.
Thank you, Commissioner Glover, or Chair Glover and Commissioners. First, I'd like to welcome Mr. Baker, Commissioner Baker. I'm from San Mateo County. I'm on the PAC. We have a mutual concern with Caltrain, I'm sure. And I would just like to say that we are building a tremendous amount of housing in San Mateo. One of the stations, the Hayward Park Station, we're breaking ground right now on 600 units of housing at the old Kmart site. In fact, the work is going on right now to take the tanks out of the one filling station that was on the property and to clean that site. We should, right after the first of the year, have the building down for Kmart and driving nails this spring. I was at the last Transit Authority meeting, and I sat on their CAC. And it was reported, and I was a little bit surprised with the dropping gas prices, the exponential in the last quarter increase in Caltrain ridership. Caltrain brings probably the largest fare box return of any transit product in the Bay Area. And I'm hoping that everybody will get behind the need to fund this electrification. I just spent time at the groundbreaking for the airport connector. I worked very hard on that, even though and turning people out for the meetings, even though I live in San Mateo County. I've worked on many other counties' projects, and I would hope that we all stand together, forget the drawbridges, and try to get Caltrain electrified, because it is a major cog in the wheel for regional transit, and we have to look at this as a region. I certainly do. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the only public speaker that I have on this. Let's see, do I have someone coming for it? Did you want to speak on this item? Are you rolling? I have your card. It is asking for 3C.
Ah, okay. Which, my mistake, which item are we on?
Okay. We're on 3B.
Okay. My mistake. I apologize.
And I'll get to you, Commissioner Spearing. Sorry.
So, just off the record, some of you may remember me from 2 years ago. I was one of the strongest advocates for the nine-party MOU. I actually got into an exchange with Lin Cheng, who was against it, because I knew exactly how to do a blended system in the peninsula. But the reason I'm talking to you today is that the time has come to really start looking about what's going on here, okay? We just had an audit of the Caltrain finances, and let's just say that the results were interesting, and it's about the time that somebody starts looking at their capital projects. So let's just start looking at bridges and what's going on in San Mateo. I'll tell you what's going on in San Mateo. Those four bridges don't need replacing. Everybody knows that. Okay, they were retrofitted at a cost of $12 million 3 years ago. What's really going on in San Mateo is that right now they are implementing the high-speed rail program-level EIR without any environmental clearance or funding. And that's where all this fighting for funding is coming from. I'll give you an example. The Queen Street Bridge in San Francisco that the supervisors are very familiar with, your funding disappeared in 2009 with the CTC resolution. The reason it disappeared is that if you end up vacating a street instead of building a bridge, you lose your grade separation funding, okay? We are losing funding on the replacement. This is why we're late getting this additional rolling stock for Caltrain, okay? Because the money is going to all those capital improvement projects. Now, let me just talk a little bit about capital funding. I actually wrote a letter to the board a year ago suggesting that they fund the entire rolling stock replacement with private capital, including a maintenance contract and a new maintenance facility. And as this gentleman pointed out earlier, Caltrain is the only transit system in the entire Bay Area that can fund that kind of capital project purely out of the fare box. I never even got a reply from the board. And I'm going to leave you with one final comment. You've got 2 months in front of you now. And this body has to do due diligence and fully audit all the current Caltrain capital projects. Because if you don't leave us any choice but to refer the matter to a civil grand jury. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Spearing?
Thank you. On Tom's point about the cap and trade, Steve, you said something about you were encouraged by the rail program with the Strategic Growth Council. My understanding is that they're going to accept projects from anybody, just about any project sponsor. I mean, how are we going to deal with competing projects in our region? Are we going to build a priority, or how are we going to deal with that?
We expect to, and just to make sure I wasn't misunderstood, I was saying nice things about the rail and expressing concern about the housing and TOD pot, and I think we need to keep them separate because I expect we might have very different outcomes. You know, for the one, the rail program, I think we got draft guidelines that were 10 pages long or something. For the other one, they were like almost 100. Now, we're expecting some revisions this week that we hope will chop them down considerably. But our fundamental concern with the affordable housing and TOD pot is that they're making it far too complicated. And then, as you recall, when you put this layer of the disadvantaged communities on top of it, they have a requirement to spend 50% of the money in those communities. And I'm just worried that we're putting so many requirements on the project, you're going to have a hard time figuring out what can apply and what can qualify. Whereas on the rail program so far, it looks like they're sticking pretty close to statutory intent. They're contemplating entering into multi-year agreements, which we very much support. We need multi-year agreements to enter into these long vehicle contracts. So we're just much more encouraged by one than the other. I wish actually the funding levels were reversed and we had the bigger pot with the better rules, but we'll make do.
So do you see MTC as one of the project sponsors?
Probably not. We will probably be in more of our traditional role, as this committee does, of prioritizing programs. I would expect, for example, in the affordable housing and TOD, we may want to prioritize a regional list of, 150% or so of our population amount, so that we give them a good chunk of projects to consider and more than we might expect to get. So we'll be coming back to you. I think, Alex, we're planning that in February with some detail on all the programs and how we expect to apply. And don't be surprised. There'll be different procedures for each of the programs.
Yeah. For me, I hope we're ahead of that curve, because when they come to MTC to ask for the review of a project, it would be nice to say it's high on our priority list, that
correct.
we have correct. Already determined that. Because I think you're going to see, as you can hear from the comments around the table, I think you're going to see competing interests. But if we can prioritize, I think it'll put the regional priorities in a higher
and ranking. We've been talking with the congestion management agencies. In the case of the affordable housing program, we've been talking to ABAG staff as well, because we've got a number of partners on these that I think can help us accomplish that objective.
Okay, thank you. Now, there is a motion before us. Excuse me. Mayor Kwan.
Thank you. Sorry. I'd just like to follow up a little bit on that. Do we have a sense, or some of the formulas that they originally were looking at for the cap and trade funds were put the Bay Area more at a disadvantage? Do we have an idea of how the weighting finally turned out?
Well, just to review the bidding, there is the smallest program on the table is a formula program for transit operating purposes, and that formula actually favors our region. The other two programs that I've been talking about are discretionary, so there's no formula at all. And the way they wound up on the disadvantaged community issue, which initially was very disadvantageous for our region, it's slightly better. But I would still say we're very much behind the eight ball there, and the playing field is very heavily tipped toward the Central Valley.
Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I was concerned about in terms of what our collective power or weight could do around that. And then secondly, within our group, have we in the past looked at matching, or do we just base it on who had the greatest need or who had the best application? Do we have standards that we've historically used?
The draft guidelines that I mentioned have a series of factors that the agencies are considering. Just as an example, the rail pot, they're considering using how much matching money you have as a scoring criteria, but not as a threshold. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Strategic Growth Council had put out a requirement in draft form, at least, that they wanted a 50% match. And we told them that was crazy, especially if they want to put money in disadvantaged communities. Those are the guys who don't have a 50% match. So we hope that will change when we see the revisions. But it's just an example of how disparate the approaches are among these various cap-and-trade programs. We're not seeing consistency.
Hey, I don't mind some match, but you're right. I mean, I think poor communities have greater needs, and they're going to have less money. The last question I have is that it's hard to tell always without looking at the overall the weight of these recommendations, given that we think there's going to be a shortfall in our area. in terms of buses versus BART, et cetera? How do we feel the weight of the cuts and the funding, that is, in terms of how many people are going to be served? So historically, BART maybe serves more people region-wide, but AC Transit in the East Bay serves more poor people, low-income people, but with BRT, their ridership may be going up. So how do we weigh that in the cuts?
Commissioner, I sympathize with your point because this is one of the most complicated programs we do. But I think to boil it down to its essence, we have a lot more capital need than this program can fund. And as a result, we've developed over the years a priority system that, generally speaking, we focus this investment on replacing vehicles, buses and rail cars, and rehabilitating the roads that those rail cars run on. And that's all we can do. We can't get very much farther down the list. So we have, generally speaking, been able over the years when AC or BART or Muni, whoever it is, they've got a rail car or bus purchase, we've generally been able to meet it, but not much else.
And the proportion of roads versus vehicles?
Well, we have two different programs. One of them is focused very heavily on rail facility replacement, and the other is focused, just again to simplify, on the vehicles. Buses have the virtue that they can run on roads that somebody else repairs, whereas trains don't. They've got to repair their own road. And so we have to take care of all of those expenditures, and we have been able to do so, but that still leaves us with this very large capital shortfall that we've tried to address with these other
If I were facing one of my many advocates and they were saying you're spending too much on freeways, what would I say? Well, no, we're spending this much on freeways.
Well, in terms of freeways, we're spending less on freeways than almost any major metropolitan area in the country.
And but what percentage
are, what
would
we
that
are spending
be?
We're going to get from toll revenue from the people driving on the roads.
So what percentage again?
About 5%
on
our
freeways.
Total plan is going to road expansion, which is the lowest percentage, last time I looked, of the top 20 metropolitan areas in the country.
And I think, you know, that the one thing I would just say, because I have a lot of advocates in my town, I think if we could make that more clear, you know, because that's the common national complaint, and all the national advocates say, oh, you're spending too much on freeways and not enough on public transit.
You know, they say generals are always fighting the last war. I think some of our advocates are trying to kill the freeways that were killed in the 60s.
Okay.
We have not been spending much on roads in this region for a long time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, are there any other commissioners' questions? Okay, seeing none, we have a motion before us, and is the motion clear to everyone? Okay. If we could restate the motion so that we know that it's clear.
So the motion is to approve the item with the exception of deferring or continuing the one Caltrain item by 2 months.
Okay. All in favor of the motion? Aye. Oppose? Okay. Thank you. We will now move to our next item, which is the financial status of one Bay Area grant program and revision of the local OBAG policy.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Craig Goldblatt, and I'm with the Programming and Allocations Group. This item involves two parts. The first part is to update the committee on the shortfall in the One Bay Area grant program and recommend an approach to address it. The second part is a recommendation to provide more time for jurisdictions to meet local policy compliance deadlines. The commission established the One Bay Area grant program, also known as OBAG, in May 2012, which made available nearly $800 million of federal funds to regional and local transportation programs and projects. To provide lead time for the development of projects, the OBAG program covered a 4-year time frame from fiscal year 2012-13 through fiscal year 2015-16. Funding capacity was estimated looking at trend lines and federal legislative developments during program development. With just 2 years left of OBAG, looking at actual apportionments, there is a significant funding shortfall, which amounts to $32 million, which is rounded annually. The reasons for this include the following factors. The demographic and air basin designation changes occurred during that time period, which are used for our distribution, and that reduced that amount of funds. And the estimates were based on safety extensions, which were artificially high due to earmarks being included. And lastly, there were higher Caltrans fund takedowns for local program oversight. In response to the shortfall, staff recommends that one more year, fiscal year 2016-17, be added to the current OBAG program to maintain fund levels. Funds from this year would eliminate the shortfall, which is $126 million, and the remaining balance of $27 million would be directed to continue time-critical planning and operations programs during that year, which are outlined on Attachment 1 and in the Resolution 4035 Attachment B. The second item involves OBAG local compliance policies, which are conditions for funding in the next cycle. Local jurisdictions must have general plans in place that address state mandates for providing housing through the Regional Housing Needs Allocation, also known as RENA, those commitments, and to comply with the Complete Streets Act of 2008, which is state legislation. The current deadline is January 31st, 2015. Staff recommends providing additional time to the jurisdictions as follows. First, to extend the deadline for the housing element certification to May 31st, 2015, to line up with a 120-day grace period that was provided by the California Department of Housing and Community Development, HCD. Along with this extension, staff also recommends retaining HCD certification as the compliance milestone, the same that was used for OBAG 1. The other deadline would be for the circulation element, and which would meet the California Complete Streets Act, and extend that by 1 year to January 31st, 2016. This addresses concerns brought earlier this year from a number of local jurisdictions about the difficulty of meeting the Complete Streets Act deadline. Reasons include that the circulation element update is more involved and complex than the housing element update, and there additionally were discussions about this requirement with the Active Transportation Working Group and other stakeholders on how to best move forward to implement the OBAC Complete Streets requirement. This extra year will also provide time to discuss this requirement further with the jurisdictions and stakeholders as we develop OBAG 2 policies over the next year. I'd finally like to move into the upcoming milestones for developing the next cycle of OBAG 2. We will be in the spring working with stakeholders to develop an OBAG 2 proposal, and we would take this OBAG 2 framework to you subsequently to finalize the schedule. And then in the summer, we would continue outreach and to refine the proposal further. And we would anticipate that we would in fall take the final proposal to this committee and PAC. So in conclusion, staff recommends that the committee refer resolution number 4035 revised to the commission for approval, and I'm pleased to answer any questions at your pleasure.
Okay, you've heard staff recommendations. Any questions or comments from commissioners? Okay. Commissioner Haggerty?
Yeah, thank you. I'm not quite sure that it's the appropriate time, but seeing it here, just a question. Priority conservation areas, is there any chance at all we're going to get to a point where we can add more money to that? Because I noticed that for 16-17, we're not adding any more money.
During fiscal year 16-17, I think we were only looking at some of the critical operations and planning programs. So we didn't include any of the grant programs that are for discrete projects. But we will, when we bring a proposal to you, we are going to be looking at all of the programs that we have in the current cycle of One Barrier Grant and be reporting to you on what the recommendations are for all of the programs in the next cycle, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, thank you. And I do hope we can see a substantial increase in that area. And I also, as we move forward, I hope that when you do come back, that we can start finding a way to be a little bit more friendly to the suburbs.
Okay. Commissioner Weiner, did you?
I was going to move approval.
Okay, there's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, I do have a public speaker on this item, Marty Martinez.
Hi, thanks. I'm Marty Martinez with the Safe Routes to School National Partnership, and just had a couple quick comments. One, thank you to MTC staff for working really hard on the complete streets requirement. That's a part of OBAG. We've worked really hard on that and think that's really important, and appreciate that the current general plan update requirement is maintained, at least for now, in that piece while discussions continue. So really think that extension for a year is completely fine. One thing about the One Bay Area grant extension I just want to raise as an issue under the regional Safe Routes to School money is included in that. And right now, you know, the commission has supported $5 million each year for 4 years, and so with the extension, there would be. We think it's great that the proposal calls for an extension of that for fully funding the 4 years and extending money into the fifth year. But I am concerned that the money would be half the amount in the fifth year, and obviously we're dealing with a shortfall. But I do just want to emphasize that I know a lot of the county Safe Routes to School programs are going to find that extremely difficult to make up that shortfall, and I'm hoping that something can be done to try to address that as well. So, thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Wirth.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I support the recommendations and appreciate the recommendation of staff to extend the deadline for local jurisdictions to comply, both consistent with the state requirements regarding HCD, as well as the extending the complete streets for another year, because it is a huge responsibility and obligation from cities, and I'm especially concerned about small jurisdictions that are, you know, amending a general plan is a significant investment of time and resources. So are we providing technical assistance to those jurisdictions that will be undertaking, particularly the complete streets revisions?
Given that those meeting the Complete Street Acts of 2008 is a state piece of legislation, and not MTC doesn't really outline what the requirements are for meeting that, because that is pretty much between the jurisdiction of the cities and the county and their own attorney to decide how their general plan does meet or does not meet that requirement. The Office of Planning and Research in Sacramento does offer guidance on how to meet that requirement, but MTC staff hasn't wanted to really insert itself in making those determinations.
Like, I guess it sounds like you do, though, have the local jurisdiction working group that works with you to kind of discuss best practices and share ideas in terms of implementation.
So we do have an active transportation working group and a complete streets group that talks about these issues.
Okay. No other questions. We do have a motion before us and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. It passes. We'll go to our next item on the agenda, which is the informational item, the Transit Performance Initiative and Investment Semi-Annual Report. Correct?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Craig Bosman from the Programming and Allocations staff, here to present item 3D, the Transit Performance Initiative Investment Program semi-annual update. So as a reminder, the TPI investment program is designed for low-cost capital improvements to improve operations and customer experience on key transit corridors affecting lots of riders. The Commission committed $82 million to these important improvements, and today I'm reporting on round one, which was awarded in spring 2012. Round two projects were awarded in September of this year and will be getting underway in 2015. And we'll come back to you in the future for authorizing a third round. So just as an overview, there were $28 million awarded in round one, and five projects are currently underway. The sixth The San Francisco 9 San Bruno project will follow the time frame of round two, and the scope was just determined along with those round two projects. Overall, we're seeing a lot of progress, and these projects are designed to be relatively fast to implement. So construction is largely underway or starting soon, and by the next update, we should be very close to completion on these projects. I'll run through briefly the five projects. So AC Transit Line 51, a lot of a package of transit signal priority and physical modifications that will really speed up this route. It's currently under construction, and projection completing is spring 2015. You'll note we put a yellow on this. At the time that the presentation went out, there were some delays in Berkeley, but I'm happy to report that the memorandum of agreement has been signed, and construction should be starting immediately in Berkeley. So we don't really have any concerns about this project right now. Construction is well underway in Alameda and Oakland, and I'll actually show some pictures at the end of this. There's two projects in San Francisco. Both are related to transit signal priority, colorized lanes, and other minor improvements to speed up reliability, to improve travel time and speed up reliability. One is the Mission Customer First project, which should be completed by June, and this involves a lot of colorized lanes for buses as well as transit signal priority. If you've been downtown recently, you'll have seen some prominent red lanes in Market Street and some other nearby locations. The other one is the NJUDA Customer First. This is also scheduled for completion this summer. There's not a lot of physical progress in the field now because it's being combined with the Sunset Tunnel rehabilitation work. And so over the next several months, over 15 different weekends, that'll be shut down and all the work is going in at the same time. There's also two projects for VTA. One is Stevens Creek Limited 323, and this is the transit signal prioritization for that bus route. That's well underway and should be completed in a couple of months. The intersection equipment has been installed, and the bus components coming next. And finally, the light rail transit system is also getting transit signal priority, and that's underway with procurement ongoing. I'd also like to touch on, so the second round had $19 million that were programmed, and these will begin reporting when the funds are accessible next year. And as part of that, this commission peeled off $8 million for Clipper expansion on small operators. A number of these services have launched already, including the San Francisco to Vallejo ferry and Marin and Napa and Solano counties. You can see the schedule for deployment over the next couple of years, culminating with SMART in summer 2016 with those Clipper expansions. So the next semi-annual update will be in spring 2015. Like I said, hopefully we'll be very close to completion, if not completed on some of these projects, and the third funding round. And I'd like to show a couple of pictures real quick. This is the Line 51 project in Oakland at Broadway and 30th. You'll see a couple photos, one in construction, one near completion of a far side bus stop relocation. So when put in conjunction with transit signal priority, this will make it the route a lot more efficient, number of places. Similar treatment at Hawthorne on Broadway, and also in Alameda at Webster and Atlantic, another bus stop far side relocation. So that's just a little taste of the Line 51 project, and hopefully we'll have a lot more interesting photos to come. So I'm happy to take any questions. Otherwise, it's an informational item.
Thank you. Any questions? Commissioner Spearing.
Do we get a report after these projects are finished on, you know, have they accomplished the objective or any performance review?
Yes, we'll be asking sponsors to provide information on what kind of travel time savings they've seen. I know that in San Francisco, they've already reported some preliminary results on their transit signal priority and colorized lanes, and they've seen 10 to 20% increases on reliability on the routes. So we're happy to see that and looking forward to more data.
Okay. Okay, this is an informational item. We thank you for the report.
Okay.
We will now move to our next item, which is
the California Transportation Commission update. And that will be given by Ann Richmond.
Good morning again, Ann Richmond with Programming and Allocation staff. The CTC met on November 12th in Sacramento, and the main item related to this region was the state's approval of the Active Transportation Program. As you'll recall, we took action on that earlier this fall for about $31 million to 11 projects in the region, and that program was approved by the state. They also began discussions of the next round of ATP funding, so we will be coming back to you in a couple of months with an update on the guidelines for that program. And finally, many of you probably know this already, but at the November meeting, CTC Executive Director Andre Boutros announced his retirement, which is scheduled to occur later this month.
Okay. Any questions, comments? Okay. Thank you, Ann. Next is public comment. We have two speakers, and I think we got it right this time, Roland. You want to come forward? He'll be followed by Ken.
Okay, thanks again. And I want to apologize if sometimes I sound frustrated, but I'm going to give you a little bit of background and explain to you where I live. In San Francisco, I would basically be living at the end of the theater. That's where I live. I'm trying to get to Caltrain. And there's a Caltrain station there. There's no Caltrain service. There's three trains come from Gilroy in the morning, and same three trains go back to Gilroy in the evening. We just built 2.5... No, we actually built 5,000 homes there. People are moving in. Okay? The freeways have stopped. Northbound 85, northbound 87. They're basically the parking lots after 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay? And what I think would be nice, if you could have something similar to what Alameda County is thinking of, is to have a BART, they call it a BART DMU overlay, that basically uses the Capitol Corridor tracks and goes from Oakland all the way to Pittsburgh. If you could have something similar that would go, let's just say, for the sake of argument, all the way up to a Santa Clara, Levi Stadium, and turn around in Alviso, that would be great. And the last thing I'd like to do is to share with you my frustration. There's another capital project in San Mateo County. It's called the Hillsdale Station. It's a grade separation at 25th Avenue. 25th Avenue does not need grade separating. What's really going on down there is that they are raising the track so that they can open up 28th and 31st, okay, and build a new Hillsdale Station. That's what's really going on there. It's $82 million. They're supposed to put four tracks there. They're only going to put two tracks, which means we're going to have absolutely no increase in capacity whatsoever in the system. And I'd really appreciate if somebody could look at this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ken?
Yeah, hi, Ken Mikowski. I still want to say this is the only meeting I go to where there's a compensation announcement, and I applaud you for the overcompliance. I've created a new section on the webpage called People so that every time someone's recognized, I'm going to create a separate video for that. So 15 years from now, you could tell your grandson or grandkid, hey, take a look. This is when I was honored. I have hundreds of VHS tapes of Emeryville meetings, and I've been going through some of them, and I'm finding when, you know, firefighters and policemen were introduced 25 years ago, and they find those recordings really interesting. So we're creating history here. And also I want to mention that I am creating a separate video for each agenda item. So if you want to refer to it, you're talking to somebody else, you don't have to go to the whole meeting. It's right there. Regional-video.com. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Okay. At this time, I just want to take the opportunity to welcome Jason Baker and maybe give him an opportunity to introduce himself.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, Jason Baker from the city of Campbell, right next to Los Gatos, where my predecessor, Joe Brzezinski, was from. And his wife retired a couple days after he finished his term after 16 years on the council. So he's going to find some other projects for a little while. I've got two young kids, 4 and 6, and a wife named Mairead.
Okay. Thank you. Brzezinski was difficult for me. Baker comes easy. Okay.
Can I just want to compliment our council that we are the only agency in the region that does the compensation announcement. So that's providing good leadership. Thank you, Adrian. Yeah, well, you forced them into it.
Okay. With that, we are adjourned.